This is Spencer Fuller, your host of FearCast, where fear is nothing gained, but motivation drives the soul. On today's episode of FearCast, we're going to talk about expert witness in cases. My guest is Raymond Lim from the Pierce College Psychology Department. His doctorate was in ergonomics, and we'll be talking about the Challenger situation and the proposed measures NASA have taken in 1986 when it blew up and its debut launch. And more so about Dr. Lim's background, he has taught at California State University, Los Angeles, and at North Carolina State University. This can be more theoretical, more relatable to social psych topic. Well, it appears in most texts. I believe Dr. Snow teaches this subject in our psychology department. Students are interested. It's Psych 13 class, and an elective that's needed for the psychology major, and we have an associate degree. Psychology was always a major at Pierce College. However, this is the first time it's available as a degree program. In most cases, the psychology department predicts students' success is gained without completion of this degree yet for high school just starting out. I recommend taking this or taking a route in social behavioral sciences if you're not sure what you want to specialize in. Psychology is the Latin word for the study of the body and the soul. However, it's fairly a new concept and is at least 100 years old, I believe. So what would be a possible career in psychology, Dr. Lim?
Well, in psychology, you know, it's a vast majority of things you can look into. My particular background is quite unique because people said, well, you're an engineer and you're a psychologist. How do those two go together? Well, for psychology, it's interested in the mind, behavior. Engineer, we're looking at mechanics, the adaptation, and how we can improve a human life. And then from there, in engineering psychologists, we just basically focus on how we can have the person and the machine work in unison with each other. So for instance, if you take out your cell phone, it's a smartphone, right? There are things on there known as icons. And with icons, it's like, oh, which one represents what? Well, you point to your eye, that's an icon. That represents, oh, this is a symbol that does this. Same as ear cons, a little beep, a ring, or toot from your phone gives you that signal. Oh, I got a text from my friend. Oh, I got an alarm clock. See, and this is how we integrate the man with the machine, or the person with the machine is my area of specialty, you know, in psychology. Now, again, there's a vast majority of topics we can look at, from developmental psychology, from a kid growing up to they are dying, you know, to actually biological, how the one person's biology, the brain behavior affects them, how social psych, you know. And we have a lot of this vast majority of specialties in our actual department. You believe that? I mean, from our department, we have about, let's see, oh, geez, at least a dozen folks that can pretty much cover all the spectrum of psychology in our department. And that includes the adjuncts, over a dozen folks that has that specialty.
As far as the statistics course, how important is statistics in learning psychology?
Well, for us, and people always ask me, so what do you teach? I teach statistics. And you're a psych major? I said, yes, I am. How is it that those two goes together? I said, well, it's quite simple, because for us, how do you measure and predict and also basically verify that the experiment works or your theory is correct? Well, basically, when it comes to statistics, we want to basically measure, okay, and then basically then from there carry out our experiment, and then from there say, okay, did we have manipulate something, and did it cause a different or a change in someone's behavior or their attitude or their beliefs or anything like that? And from statistics, we can verify that, oh yeah, it did work. Oh yes, it did happen. Oh yes, it's awesome. Drugs did work. Therapy did work. A treatment did work. And then from there on, we could say, let's go ahead and continue this further on in our experiment, in our research. So that's why we like to use statistics a lot in psychology.
So undergraduates, besides getting involved with the American Psychological Association, I just happened to find out the ASO has chartered a new club, Psych Club, on campus, and Maria Purser and Jose Ibarra are the advisors. And I do encourage students to join, and I think it's really great that they have this club. And I think that we can probably try to get students to participate more in competitions because of our research methods course. We actually have it in the fall. Dr. Belden will be teaching it.
Absolutely. It was a course that was created when I just started here. And it's great because what we can do is we can form a theory, carry out the experiment, and then from there, analyze the results. And then the awesome thing is, like, if something shows up that's interesting, a story you can tell. And this is what I do when it comes to research. I want to see if I can tell a story. And if the story is told how great this research works, then guess what we have? We can make a presentation in Psych 74, which is the, I believe they have the psychology forum or showcase. There it is, psychology showcase. That's actually during the same time at the end of the semester for Psych 74. And students can actually showcase their experiments. And for me, honestly, if it's something that's even really interesting, that's worthwhile, I would say, hey, why don't you just present to the local conference? We have a local conference known as Western Psychological Association, WPA. And actually this, I think it's the 23rd or 24th, it's in Pasadena Convention Center this year. They're actually going to have the convention there. It's pretty cheap, inexpensive to attend. And I would highly recommend it, especially if you're a person that wants to go into psychology, and then just to see what's available, what's being done. And, you know, if you're a psych major, you're going to go in there, you're going to be so overwhelmed, but you'll be so energized to see that there are other people of your age group is actually presenting their research. And you'll be so energized to say, I want to do this. And in fact, I mean, you can see big names. You can see professors from all the UCs, from the Cal States, to even the private university like USC or Stanford that's there attending this this WPA, the conference. And like I said, I go every year because I get energized to see what's out there, what students are doing, and also to just see some familiar faces from other universities.
Yes, definitely. I actually had the opportunity to participate in SCUR, which is the Southern California Conferences for Undergraduate Research, and I had work that was more on the lines of cultural psychology, and it was dealing with African-American community in terms of diagnosing conduct disorder in adolescents throughout the lifespan. And I ended up going against 800 students across the U.S., not to put pressure, guys. It's definitely worth it to sign up for this class and work on an abstract, and you'll definitely feel so much better for it when you transfer to UC or CSU, whichever of your choice. And I have a question. As far as, like, finding a university, the best one, does it have to be APA accredited, or it kind of just depends on what you want to do as far as, like, research?
Well, most of these universities, I believe that in their psychology program, they are APA accredited. Mm-hmm. WASC for sure, Western American Schools Council for the universities. But regardless of that, one of the advice that my professor gave me is not about where you want to go, but who you want to work with. And from then on, I heeded his advice, because the first thing he said to me, he goes, hey, Ray, you got into the University of Hawaii, and you also got into North Carolina State. Where are you going to go? And this typical student would answer, what would you say?
I would say North Carolina State.
Right answer. But most students would say University of Hawaii. And I said that because at first I was very impressionable. I said, oh, Hawaii, of course. And then he said, wrong answer. You know why he said wrong answer to me? Mm-hmm. Because at that time he said, Ray, you're going to be out at University of Hawaii. The waves are crashing. The doors are open. The windows are open. You see all this action going on outside, and you wish you could be part of it. And you are going to delay and delay and delay. Why do you want to do that to yourself? So how about this? Why don't you go to North Carolina State, and you're in the office, you're in the lab, you finish your degree in 5, 6, 7, 8 years. Average for a PhD is around 8 years. You know that, right? Master's and PhD is about 8 years. Okay. And he said, why don't you get this done? Because why is that important? Think about it this way. And basically, he said this, I took heart to it when he said, if you graduate after 8 years versus 9 years, I said, yeah, what's wrong with taking a year later? Think about it. Every year you delay in graduation, how much do you think you make a year after finishing grad school? I said, I don't know, 60 grand a year? There you go. Every year you delay, it's $60,000 out of your pocket. And I said, wow, thank you for bringing that subject up to me, putting it that way to me. So from then on, I kind of said, you know what? I'm in a hurry to finish school. And that's why I finished kind of early compared to my cohorts.
Very great. So as far as psychology, how we solve human problems for the Challenger with NASA, this was more kind of a whole conspiracy theory, like publicity thing. They ended up having 7 astronauts, and I believe Christy McClaver, she was a part of the NASA teacher program, and she was so excited, and a mother of 2, and she wanted to be this mentor, and I'm glad that you brought up someone of your mentor, I guess. And from having that said, how important would a teacher would go, like, for a student as far as, like, trying to motivate them in order to be successful, or it depends on the teacher?
I think that becoming a professor / teacher / educator, we're not doing it for the money. Because for myself as a person in human factors, actually, you know, as a consultant, I can say it's pretty lucrative out there not teaching. But I chose teaching because I think it fits my personality, just like most of the professors here, or if not all the professors here. They want to go into teaching because why? They want to look at the greater good. How is it that I can mold the younger generation? Because eventually, you guys are going to take care of us older folks. You know that. And because of that, I would say that that's the reason why I think it's so rewarding, for myself it is, to basically see the student's eye light up when they say, I got this, you know? Yeah. I got this. I'm like, oh my gosh, I feel that too, the excitement. And then they give me a virtual hug. Say, oh, I want to hug you. I said, that's okay. Just step back there and give me a virtual hug because I know you've earned it because they feel so good, especially when they pass their second statistics test. And they said, I don't ever get an A on my stat test until now. I says, look, that's because you did it yourself, you know? And okay. I need that, give them that encouragement. Yes.
All right. So we're going to talk about the Challenger now. Mm-hmm. The major problem with the Challenger was that a bunch of engineers, mm-hmm. they were relying on data, and we brought up statistics, and that was a very good point. Because if you're having accurate data and also being able to understand that that data is valid and to not have direct pressure from constituents saying that we're going to go by this data and we're not going to go by, like, or, you know, or manager hats. Like, how do you make that distinction, even like when you had to go like on your cases for your expert witness?
So for us as an expert witness, we have to defend our opinion. Mm-hmm. That's what it is. And I thank you for bringing this up because this morning I said, okay, let me go ahead and read up about the Challenger disaster. And I read up that the issue was a O-ring that had not sealed the fuel going through. So then it had leaked through the second chamber and then it had exploded. And that's what caused the disaster. Reading upon it even further, there's a human factors issue in that, which is communication. Mm-hmm. Because for us in human factors, we have CHIP, CHIP, which is communication, human information processing, in order for us to make a decision. This is the model that we use, that I use also, you know, especially when it comes to warnings and risk perception. You know, and this is an error analysis that I looked into, say, how did this happen? Why did this happen? Well, because when one engineer says, look, we understand that metal expands when it gets hot, it contracts when it's cold. Apparently, the seal was meant for this particular ambient temperature, and it was too cold. And because it was too cold, perhaps maybe that's the reason why, the reason for the seal not being able to expand, because the metal was not expanding as they thought it would, and hence that's why it failed to seal. So the human factors part behind it is because of the communication. Now, as a psychologist, what can we say? Well, perhaps maybe the person should say, look, let's go ahead and delay this launch until we figure out, is this going to be something that's risky to do? And at that time, probably they were saying it's worth the risk to basically send these 7 people up. Whereas they should have said, wait, what's one day more delay? Well, everyone's America watching. I understand, but which one? What's the risk involved here? some people could perish, or we could say, wow, we're all going to celebrate because we sent some astronauts up. So what should have happened was, I wish that the engineers, the person that was in charge of the SEALs or the metal expansion department, the engineer said, you know what, let's hold up and be a little bit more assertive and say, look, this could be a cause, okay, and stand up for what they believe, you know, and that's why I think it needs to be a human factors component in that, yeah.
Yeah, I believe that Warren Thayer called it, that's the engineer company that was kind of more involved with the kind of the part where the O-ring started to kind of manipulate with the cloud, is because they were saying that, like, if the temperature reached like 56 degrees, then it's more valid. But in terms of reliability, I know that's like a main topic in stats.
Yes.
You could explain that, like, real quick, validity versus reliability.
Well, validity is basically looking at whether it's the actual experiment, the study is valid. You know, did you truly test what you're supposed to test? Mm-hmm. You know, if we're going to say, hey, we want to see if this, let's say this one particular drug, did it really have an effect? Or is it, could have been something else? You know, and that's when we make sure that our experiment is valid. Okay. Reliability is making sure that over time, you know, we can see whether if it's reliable, meaning that the same type of expectation of answers that we're going to get. Let's see.
Yeah, that's what I think NASA's biggest problem was, kind of more so on the lines of relying on that data that they had originally.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, they're more like a corporate company, and mm-hmm. I don't really know as much as like how like corporate kind of gets involved with situations and them trying to like cover things up, and depending on like all the grant money that they got.
Yeah. Well, it's a shame because I think more people, well, especially a large company, wants to say it's a race.
Mm-hmm.
Understand? But again, my area is, there's a risk. What's the risk are you willing to take for this to happen? You know, and apparently they had weighted more on the risk to launch it versus not to launch it, right? Rather having the risk to have more positive publicity than the risk of the safety was involved. And sadly, that's probably what the case was in here.
I also saw, like in my research, that the Challenger in Columbia kind of had like similar problems, and I just really think that NASA really was kind of like overconfident in their ability in order to send these seven astronauts into space. And I do think that they were trying to more so just do it like for the publicity part, but at the same time, I kind of know that having someone who's kind of like impartial in the group might kind of like sway things, so there's not like a bias or an opinion, rather.
Exactly.
Yeah, and making informed decisions. As far as for NASA, having the public and the expert witnesses needed, I do think expert witnesses are very interesting. How much do they make?
You know,
interesting.
I'll give you one scenario that I had encountered not too long. Well, it's actually been maybe about 8 years ago, 9 years ago. I was sitting in my office, you know, just answering phone calls, emails and stuff. And I got a phone call from a lawyer down in Florida. I said, hey, what's going on? Hey, are you Dr. Lim? I said, you know, with a southern accent. Yeah, I said, oh, my gosh, this reminds me of being back home. Yeah, I'm Dr. Lim. How you doing, sir? And then he started saying, well, I would like to ask you for your opinion. I said, oh. And the first thing my advisor said to me, minimum and retainer. I said, okay. I said, I need a minimum of a 2-hour retainer. Fine. And he goes, how much? And I said, $250. Done. So that's $500 in my pocket just for talking to him, however long it took. But minimum two, right? So that's $500. So I said, okay, so what's your case? Well, he said, were you the author of the tire safety paper? I said, I am. And he said, okay, well, I have a case for you. I said, great, let me hear it. Let me give you a little scenario of what happened. The tire safety paper I wrote was basically a general knowledge of tire safety. Number one, I asked the general public, like a couple hundred folks, do you know how old a tire is, how to read it? And then the second thing I asked them, do you know how many years a tire should last before you throw it away, even though it has good treads? Because we have cars with wonderful tread that's sitting in the garage that's someone's project for the last 10 years, right? So at least the tire's 10 years old.
Okay.
So I said, okay. So I asked, do you know how to read a tire? Oh, yes, I do. Okay, guess what? I asked him, no one knows how to read the age of a tire. No one knows how long the tire should last. Great. Then after that, I said, okay, what's your case? The case was this. Well, hey, a person bought a tire from the junkyard, went to Walmart to have it installed. She took off, and when she was on the freeway, the tire dislodged off the rim, went over the freeway, and then decapitated the lady going the opposite way, instantly killing her. The family is suing the lady and suing Walmart. Guess what my job was?
What was your job?
My job was to defend the woman because, again, my research says not everyone, if not no one, knows how to tell the age of a tire, let alone how many years a tire should be before you throw it out. And guess what happened? When I said this, oh gosh, what should I do? Well, I told him, this is what you should do. Let me go ahead and refer you to my advisor, who's the co-author of this paper, because he lives in Florida and he can help you better than I can in California. And then a couple years later, I asked my advisor, I say, hey, Mike, what's going on with that case? He goes, oh, thanks for the referral because I got some good money out of it, but Walmart settled. So basically, she was off the hook, yeah, because she didn't know.
Yeah, so guys, having an expert witness is extremely important to prevent groupthink, and groupthink is just having everyone make an unanimous decision without having any different opinions. Thank you so much, Dr. Lim, for being on my show, and on the next episode, I will have Eddie, the math department chair, and we'll be talking about math anxiety, so more math, and the Pierce College Council topics as well.